Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song. Something you never seen before. So gather around, squeeze it tight, 'cause you're bound to hear a little truth tonight. 'Cause the love around here is bound to make you fall. Head over heels for heaven above.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part one of Why Can't We Be Good? So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 7 verse 15 as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So many things in this chapter that are so, so important and so relevant, not just for this time, but for all time. Because this chapter is really dealing with the issue that we have dealt with from the very beginning of time. And it's the issue of sin and the question of why can't we be good? And there are numerous attempts to answer that question. And I want to look at some of the attempts to answer that question by those who don't receive the biblical answer, but yet are sincerely looking for an answer, and then compare their findings or their theories with what the Bible actually tells us. But let me read to you verses 15 through 20 of chapter 7 here. Paul, of course, is speaking. He said, "For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice, but what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do. But the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me." Now, this question, why can't we be good? Several people have asked this question and attempted to answer the question. And like I said, I want to look at someone who I think is sincere in their attempt to discover the answer to this question. And I say that because there are people that are insincere. There are people who would hold a relativistic view of things, who would say, oh, well, you know, there really isn't any such thing as good or evil. It's all relative. It's all up to your individual preference and those kinds of things. That is so utterly foolish, we don't even need to give it time. But there are those others out there who are more honest. They're, I think, sincere. Their evaluation of the situation is pretty accurate. And they're grappling with this whole issue. But in all of their grappling, they're, I think, clearly coming short of the correct answer to these questions. So I want to quote to you from a man by the name of Jacob Needleman. I quoted from him earlier in the series, but regarding the question, why can't we be good? He said, "It was the question of Socrates. It was the question of St. Paul. It is the question that calls to us in the sacred writings of the world, and which defines the pathos of all serious art and literature. It is the well from which the great reformers of mankind draw all their passion. The question has taken many forms throughout the ages, but the words that cut through all the worlds and across all the epochs of human history are simply these: why do we not do what we know is good? Why do we do what we hate? It is the question we never really ask, and is the only one that can make a difference. For all the vast religious and ethical literature available to us today, for all the evidence of the futility of violence and hatred in our lives and in the world, for all our efforts to find the help we need, for all our yearning to be men and women capable of love, the question remains, why can't we be good? Now, before I carry on quoting him, let me just tell you a little bit about this man. Jacob Needleman. He is a professor of philosophy at San Francisco State University and former director of the Center for the Study of New Religions at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. He was educated at Harvard, Yale, and the University of Freiburg in Germany. He has also served as a research associate at the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research and was a research fellow at Union Theological Seminary. In addition to his teaching and writing, he serves as a consultant in the fields of psychology, education, medical ethics, philanthropy, and business. There's a reason why I'm giving you his background. But listen, this is what he goes on to say, and this is what I mean by, here's a person who's honestly, he's looking at the situation, and I think he's realistically describing what is the case in our world. He said, our question is vast. Vast beyond imagining. It concerns the entire history of mankind, of the world. Who can conceive the extent of man's inhumanity to man through all the ages of time? Even those among us who have been deeply and personally scarred and devastated by the unfathomable brutality of human evil, even they cannot probably imagine all the horror of this evil throughout the ages of human life on earth, from the glories of pharaonic Egypt and the proud conquering armies of ancient China and Persia and Alexander, to the slaughtering hordes of Central Asia, to all the countless genocides and near genocides of yesterday and today, the stain of human evil covers the earth and seeps into all man's achievements in art, science, and the institutions of society. Religion, as we know it, cannot change it, nor, it seems, even understand it. Our science of psychology, so full of hope only a few decades ago, cannot change it or understand it. Government cannot control it, nor, most often, even refrain from manifesting it itself. And as we know close to hand, our modern institutions of commerce and business, heedless of the cost to human life and welfare, continue to shock us as they violate the most fundamental canons of trust and honesty. Carried into the bloodstream of our modern culture by the great social technology of money and finance, the heartless calculus of exploitation and blind profit infects nearly every aspect of human life on earth. The question is vast beyond imagining in its breadth and depth in human history, but it is equally vast, so to say, in its personal, individual intimacy. The force of human evil, call it by what name you will, reaches as deeply into the individual human heart as it reaches into the causal chain of human history. It is as much one's own, my own central fact as it is a central fact of humanity, man on earth. The two aspects of evil, the inner and the outer, the personal and the collective, reflect each other. And we cannot imagine, we cannot comprehend either aspect of the force of evil, just as we cannot imagine, cannot comprehend the greatness and goodness of what we are in our hidden essence. The point is this: this guy sees evil for what it is. He's not covering it up. He's not trying to pretend it's not happening. He's not relegating it over to, well, it's an illusion, or, well, you know, that you just think it's evil, but, you know, I don't think it's evil. He's not doing that. He's giving, I think, a very honest and sincere picture of the situation. So he says self-knowledge is the hidden root. So now he's diagnosing the situation. Now he's coming around to his conclusion. So he says self-knowledge is the hidden root of ethics and morality. So that's the question. You know, why can't we be good? How can we be good? Self-knowledge is the hidden root of ethics and morality. The need to understand the fundamental contradiction in ourselves between what we know to be good and what we actually do. The need to see ourselves deeply and resist the attempt to change ourselves by our own imaginary strength. But in order really to see this contradiction and to suffer it in a way that can bring new life to us, it was paradoxically all the more necessary to try to be what we wish to be toward our neighbor, to try with all our strength to obey the moral law, to be good. The words of Socrates were, "Know thyself, not change thyself." And it was St. Paul standing forever in front of this profound contradiction in himself and in man who called on the help that can come to man only from another level of the inner being. I missed that part in Paul's letter here, but we'll talk about that in a moment. So here's the conclusion. Now, having written this book, this guy's a prolific author and he's a very well-known philosopher of religion and so forth. So at the very end of the book, he tells a story of being in an auditorium full of 14-year-olds and trying to talk to them about morality, talk to them about goodness, about ethics and things like this. And as he's trying to, you know, communicate to them, hands keep popping up all around the auditorium, and these young little faces are there, you know, sincerely looking at him with questions that everyone asks at some time or another about these kinds of things. You know, why do people get angry? Why is there war? Why is there hatred? All of those kinds of things are going on. And, you know, he talks about, you know, should he dare venture into trying to really help them at so young of age to grasp these deep, you know, concepts and so forth about this hidden essence that he talks about here and so forth. But this is what he says. He says, "At this moment, I feel an ancient presence behind me whispering to me, now go and study." So here's the summation. Having drawn from Moses, Hillel, Jesus, Muhammad, the masters of India, the Buddha, Socrates, and the whole host of the spiritually and morally wise, both ancient and modern, Needleman presents the best the world can offer as a solution to our ability to be good. This is my whole point. This is the best answer that the world can come up with. Here's a sincere guy. He's done all the research. He's read from all of the great religions, the philosophers, the moralists, ancient and modern. And so, you know, this is his conclusion. Now go and study. His solution, as sincere as he is in drawing it, the problem is it's wrong. I don't know exactly how he missed it. He quotes extensively from the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. He quotes Romans 7 numerous times. Of course, we read right there, he's alluding to the stuff we're reading here in this seventh chapter. But obviously, he has this blind spot, this spiritual blind spot, where even though he sees that Paul is obviously perfectly diagnosing the problem, he somehow misses the solution that Paul gives as well. And instead of the right conclusion of looking beyond himself for somebody else to deliver him from this condition, Needleman somehow thinks that what Paul's idea was is that you need to go deeper and deeper into yourself. So this is what we want to do, having laid the foundation or set the stage. Let's look at this whole issue of why it is that we can't be good. I think he builds a very good case. Of course, the Bible built that case a long time before him. But he builds a very good case that the world is full of evil and human beings themselves are full of evil. But you see, again, he really comes up ultimately with the wrong diagnosis. And if you have the wrong diagnosis, you're bound to then have the wrong remedy. You've got to diagnose the problem properly before you can come up with the right solution, right? So if your premise to something is wrong, if you start in the wrong place, inevitably you're going to end in the wrong place. And so this is what's happened here. So what is the wrong diagnosis that he comes to? What he concludes in this lengthy book, with all of this research, he really concludes that man's problem is insufficient knowledge. Insufficient knowledge, particularly self-knowledge, and even more specifically, knowledge of this deep, deep goodness that resides in each one of us, in our hidden essence. So this is what he believes. He sees the conflict, obviously, but he says, you know, the reality is there is a goodness there, and so we've got to get at that goodness. But he, Needleman himself, admits, with all his years of studying, the problem still remains in his own experience. So think about that. I mean, this guy has got degree after degree after degree. He's telling us knowledge is a solution. He's got a ton of knowledge, but he still hasn't conquered the problem. So what does that do for the rest of humanity? What does that do for the people who can't afford to study like that? What does it do for the people who don't have the money or the time? Or for that matter, what does it do for the people who really just don't have the interest or even the ability to study? It pretty much leaves you high and dry. So we see that this diagnosis it's an incorrect diagnosis. And of course, then the remedy is wrong as well. So what is the remedy? Well, according to Needleman, the remedy is, as he said in his final words there, the remedy is more study. We need to study more. We need to read more, the great moral thinkers. We need to go deeper and deeper into the great religions of the world and the philosophies and so forth. More study, then there needs to be, he says, more self-analysis. So we need to go deeper and deeper into ourselves. We need to go further and further in, and ultimately we're trying to get beyond all of the evil and the corruption down to that core, which he believes is our hidden, the goodness of our hidden essence. And so thirdly, more effort to tap into the energy and goodness of our hidden essence. Now, this is fascinating to me because, you know, sometimes I think as Christians, we get intimidated by philosophy. We get intimidated by those, you know, brilliant people who have done all their research and written their volumes and so forth. And we think that, wow, you know, I'm not like that. I'm not an intellectual, and you know, these people, boy, they just seem to know all of this about everything, and here I am with just my Bible. You know what? You're okay with just your Bible. Because in all of this research and all of the learning and all the study and all the compilation of all of these ideas, you know, so much of it, as you're wading through it, you realize the absurdity of it. You know, this idea that there's, you know, he begins to talk about, you know, this energy. He talks about how all of these religions and philosophies, they'll take us to the threshold, but then we've got to step over the threshold. And the way to get over the threshold into the experiences, we've got to start tapping into this energy, It's referred to as energy at its lowest level, but then the more we begin to comprehend it, it's referred to as love. And so, you know, we need to just tap ultimately into that source of love that's there in every one of us, and we're going to finally tap so thoroughly into it that it's just going to overflow and overwhelm all of humanity, and the world's going to be that wonderful place that we all wish it was going to be. But, you know, as nice as that sounds and as good as that sounds, it's just not a reality, is it? From the human standpoint, this is what men have been trying to do for centuries. This is what men have been trying to do from the beginning. They've been trying to establish a perfect world called a utopia by some, the ideal society. They want what God offers, but they don't want it under God's terms. And so they come up with a make-believe scenario that can attain it, but reality shows that we don't attain it, and we're not any closer to getting to it today than they were hundreds or thousands of years ago. So he's got the wrong diagnosis, he's got the wrong remedy. What is the correct diagnosis? The correct diagnosis is what Paul tells us right here. Not just in portions of chapter 7, this is his problem here. He quotes Paul sort of selectively, where he wants to prove his point to support his view. He quotes Paul, but then he doesn't follow through. He doesn't go all the way. You can't just take random statements here and there. You've got to take the entire context of what Paul's saying. And thank God, Paul doesn't just leave us with the problem. He leads us from the problem to the solution. So the correct diagnosis is found in the verses we read, beginning with this first point, in my flesh. Paul is speaking of himself, but he can speak collectively of all humanity. In my flesh, nothing good dwells. There is no hidden essence of goodness in any human being. It just simply is not a reality. Now, this is humanism at its purest. Men are essentially good. Their problems are not related to what's inside of them. Their problems are based on external circumstances. This is humanism. So people are bad. They wouldn't like to use that term, but we'll use it. People are bad because of, you know, a lack of certain things. They were not properly educated. They've grown up in poverty. They were forced into, you know, different types of behaviors and so forth. It's all external. The biblical picture is the opposite. In my flesh, nothing good dwells. God speaking through the prophet Jeremiah, he said this. He said the heart, and he's speaking about the core of a human being, every human being, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked or incurably sick. And then the question, who can know it? The question, who can know it, implies we cannot know the depth of our own wickedness. This is true. Man does not know how wicked he is collectively. And I think it's true of us individually as well. We think we are better than we actually are. We see people do certain things and we think, oh man, I can't believe, I'd never do anything like that. Oh, I don't know about that. Under the right circumstances, you never know. Well, you can trust the Bible, you can know. You would do despicable things, things that you would never dream that you would do, you could potentially do. Because the heart, everybody's heart, mine, yours, everybody else on the planet, is deceitful above all things, desperately wicked, incurably sick. The second thing is, not only is there no good thing dwelling in me, there is an evil thing dwelling in me. Sin dwells in me. That's what Paul says here. He says the problem is, I want to do good, but I don't do it. I don't want to do evil, but I do do it. He said, really, it's no longer I who do it. It's sin that is actually dwelling in me.
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part two of Why Can't We Be Good? But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled, Why Can't We Be Good? Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number B0135. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/Pastor Brian Broderson, also on Twitter at twitter.com/Brian Broderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
So turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.